Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Tuesday, April 1st, 2014. This is Sally Baptist, and thank you for tuning in to American Freedom Watch Radio with our host, Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. The call-in number is 347-857-4364. Make sure you press 1 to speak on the air. If you're out in that host queue and you don't press 1, we're not going to know you want to talk on the air, so make sure you do that. Or you can go into the chat room and submit comments and questions in there. With all of that being said, I've just got a couple of really, to me, there's a couple of doozies I've got to vent about today. This thing with Justina in the Boston hospital and the state of Massachusetts kidnapping this child from the parents. I talked about this last night on the show. And I'll tell you, any American who is not totally outraged by what has happened here, you must be a communist or something. I mean, that may sound extreme, but I don't know what else you say when the state goes and steals, kidnaps a child from the parents and uses, and all for the purpose of using this child as some type of a test segment, a guinea pig, for some new drug they want to experiment with. Because that's really what this all comes down to. Boston Hospital is a big with Harvard Medical Center and whatever else, and it is so despicable of everything that has happened around this. If I don't think you can be an American and not be disgusted with it. Last night I really did a major rant, if you want to call it that, about the fact that the people who work there, how could you work there and see this going on, see them killing this child, plus kidnapping her from the parents and not do anything about it. And I heard a lot of, as I've talked to other people, you know, in the past week or so on the subject, they would say, but people are afraid to lose their jobs. But I'm like, there's something wrong there with the moral decay. If it's like, well, I'm going to have to let her die because I can't lose my job. To me, it's just sick. And then the other thing, once again,
Sally, could I interrupt you?
Sure.
Just you left out something I found out very important on that poor little girl. And with this hospital, they have been using over 70-some children in this manner. So it has come up, I saw it on TV, where they are using them more or less as guinea pigs. And there has been over 100 children that were involved in this that no one can find them. They cannot trace them anywhere.
God, and you know, I believe it. And yet, if they were doing this to a bunch of monkeys in cages, people would be outraged. It's totally disgusting. Well, let me get this one other thing in here, which I wish I could say it was an April Fool's Day joke, but it's not. That guy, the dictator in that White House, within the last few days, has released 68,000 illegal immigrants who are convicted felons. I mean, is that not an act of treason? I mean, what they're doing to this girl and everything, to me, that's all a government takeover, communism, a total, you know, totally void of any moral values anymore if Americans put up with that crap. And then you've got this guy who's promoting the illegal invasion of this country, letting all the convicted illegals out and not really forcing them to be deported. It's just disgusting. And then, you know, Neil, you and I were talking just a few minutes ago about this thing with John Ellis Bush being out there for the 2016. That's a whole other thing. I won't even rant about that right this moment. That makes me so disgusted too. But these two things, Justina, the kidnapping, and treating this child like a guinea pig, and knowing that there's more out there, and then this president who just says, that's okay, let's go ahead and let those convicted felons out there. So what that they were? Some people said it was they were convicted of victimless crimes. So identity theft to these morons is a victimless crime, that they weren't the murderers. But I don't know that that's, you know, true either. But anyway, that is my rant for now. And on that note, Karen, how are you doing on this April Fool's Day?
Well, I am doing fabulous, and this is not an April Fool's joke. You're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, on Tuesday from 8 to 10, and on Red State Talk Radio com, and that would be on Wednesday at noon and on Sunday at 12 in the evening. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, KarenShone.com, VoteKarenShone.com. And with that said, Sally, we are outraged, but we have to look at history also. And that is really the problem. When history is erased, we stand to duplicate it. A couple of weeks ago, a movie came out. It was called The Monuments Men. And it was all about the men, the heroic men, and they were heroes. There is no doubt in my mind about that. And what they did was a marvelous thing. It was a wonderful thing. They went into Germany and the surrounding countries during World War II and saved the heritage of those countries by saving their art. But what they didn't save were the people. 7.3 million Ukrainians died from starvation while their wheat and food was sold to the West. 6 million Jews died in Hitler's reign, all at the same time. And our illustrious president at that time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, sat and did nothing. And when a ship came filled with Jews that had finally escaped, he turned that ship around and sent them back to Germany. And the exact same thing was done by Stalin. When the when Stalin invaded, I think it was Finland, and the Jews were saved in Finland, they sent them back to Russia to be slaughtered. So we have communists have a very, very poor responsibility and poor value of life. They do not value life, and that's why we have abortion issues. Life to them is irrelevant. You are only as good as your ability to work. And once you lose your ability to work for the state, you are irrelevant. And that's why it makes it so easy for them to call out for social justice, which nobody can define. I've asked numerous occasions, what is social justice? Go have a conversation. And the minute they say something, and what is the meaning of social justice? Could you define it for me? Can you tell me what it is? They cannot define it. Social justice is the ability to manipulate groups of people and give them favor over another group of people. And again, it is people, not the individual. So if a few individuals, like 7 or 6 million of them, disappear off the face of the earth, it doesn't matter to these people because they can just replace them with more people. People don't count. We are but a number. We have no meaning, and therefore we are losing our voice and our liberty over and over and over again because we do not know our history. And to me, education is the most important thing, and that's what we are lacking in our schools today. Our people do not understand what America is about. They don't understand the value of individualism. They do not understand what it means, and they certainly have no knowledge of the Constitution, because if they did, these treasonous traitors, as you just said, Sally, that were doing this to an innocent child while everyone sits on their hands and waits for a court. There was a movie a couple of years ago. I think it was with Will Smith. And was Mr. Washington, was that the name of it? I don't really remember 100%. But that was a father who took his son to a hospital, and the hospital refused to treat him because he didn't have the right insurance. That's where we're going with all of this. And now, drum roll please, the April Fools of the day believe that Obamacare got 7.3 million people to sign up. April Fools, because that was the biggest one that I heard today. So, folks, the people who are running the show, as I say, the traitors, the criminals, can only be taken care of when we people understand what's going on, and open our mouths and begin to speak out and run for office, go to meetings. And that was a conversation that I just had with a gentleman about 20 minutes ago. He said, but Karen, what can we do? And my answer to him was, maybe we should pay attention to what our founding fathers said. And what they said was the most important thing about education was learning to be part of your government. Civics, being part of civics, whether you run for office or whether you go to a meeting, it does not matter. America was set up for citizens to participate. If citizens are going to have the power, you can't sit on the sidelines and give the power to somebody else and expect that you're going to have the power. It doesn't work that way. And this is a big problem in America because of the way the schools are being run, because of the curriculum that is being taught. And it doesn't matter what standards they are. That doesn't make any difference. It's irrelevant. Neil, you sent over the newest rendition of the Second Amendment. Did you not?
Which one was that? Because I haven't got so many of them. I'm sorry.
Oh, that was the one where you were allowed to have a gun if you registered it.
Oh, this was in some school books, yes.
Yes.
I sent that
what
out, and it showed the page. And it said that citizens have the right to bear arms as long as they're registered.
Yeah, well, where did that come up in the Constitution?
I know.
Think I missed that class in school.
This is what they're teaching our kids. They are rewriting the Constitution to destroy their little minds, to set them up for the New World Order and to be a globalist, not an American.
Exactly. And I, you know, as a former teacher, every single time that I listen to one of these programs and I listen to one of the programs or policies or rules or regulations that come out of the mouths of our wonderful legislators, my answer to them is, and when I hear from the people and they say, but Karen, this is a problem, my answer to them is, and where have they learned this? They have learned it in school. So if we don't start paying attention, A, to our government and joining in and patient. You know, America was supposed to be a country of participation. It wasn't supposed to be a country where you work, you become the slave, and the government gives you an allowance, and that's called an entitlement, and they are allowing you to get this entitlement because you have worked for it. Well, when you work for something and you don't get paid, to me, that's called slavery. So we might have freed the black slaves, but we certainly didn't free the American slaves because that is still going on. And the other thing that our founding fathers said was that education was the second. That was of utmost importance to all of them. Look at Jefferson, how many times he said that if you educate the people, they will do the right thing. Education is most important, that the way to solve the issues was through education. He's actually one of the reasons why I became a teacher, because I loved his writing so much. But when you have a lack of education by design, and by design means on purpose, and when education is withheld and people do not learn the truth, then we have the liar and chief sitting in the White House that can say, look, 7.1 million people signed up for Obamacare. Pat myself on the back. He destroyed the single most best-run, healthiest group of American 10 that he wrote and signed that bill, that everyone is going to experience by 2020. I'm guessing, and this is a pretty decent guess based on the way this is going to work out, right now we have insurance companies that have signed on to this, by 2020, those insurance companies will be gone. And the only thing that we will have is government-issue medicine and government-issue doctors and government-issue death panels that will decide if your grandma or your mother is over 80 years old, well, gee, they're not going to get that heart transplant. Gee, they're not going to get that stent. They're not going to get that that hip replacement. What are they going to get? They're going to get managed care in a hospice situation. That's what we have to look forward to. So this is a travesty. And it's, I believe, through lack of education. And, Neil, you found a fabulous tie-in with Eminent Domain this week that was incredible. So share what is going on with what we thought is not what we now know or what is happening. And that comes out of the rails.
Right. And it's... in regard to what they call rails and trails, and rails and trails is hooked up to the main national group, the American Trails, and in Florida and other states, they're also with the Florida Greenways and Trails System. And the Supreme Court ruling they had in regarding some land in Wyoming was loss of thousands of miles of bicycle trails. And what it was the justices ruled 8-1 that government easements used for railroad beds over public and private land in the West expired once the railroads went out of business and the land must revert to its owners. And
repeat that one because that's really important.
Right. The justices ruled 8-1 that the government easements used for railroad beds over public and private land in the West expired once the railroads went out of business and the land must revert to its owners.
Well, that is amazing. Amazing. Now, has that ever happened?
Here's another thing. The ruling confirmed that the government may merely had received easements without any long-term land rights. This is what Justice Roberts had said. And in the establishment in 1983 of the Federal Rails to Trails program didn't change the court's interpretation for easements that expired earlier. But now what's going to happen is they're embedded with this Agenda 21 and all these green bunnies, all these environmentalists, and they'll probably be taking court case after court case because in the state of Florida it works the same way. You will see tons of rails, especially down south in the Sarasota, Manatee area, where mm-hmm. these trails run with the rails.
Absolutely. Even though the people are screaming no. In Pinellas County, Tony Casso, running for office, running for state senator, no tax for tracks. What does that mean? They want a penny tax for a rail system that nobody's going to use and that it is proven over and over again cannot, will not be efficient. Will not, cannot be economical. And what's going to happen? They want a penny tax from all of the people in Pinellas County to support this soon-to-be other failed rail program. People are screaming no. And guess what the Florida legislators are doing? They are practicing what we say when we say, turn the other cheek. So instead of looking at your constituents, they're turning the other cheek and they're looking at their special interest groups as they lick their chops saying, how many donations can I get if I support this? Folks, this is reality. This is what is really happening. And land is going to be grabbed left and right for these kinds of programs that are being put in place through our Florida legislature. Ladies, you're going to have a real kick about this one. This one just came in from Representative Janet Atkins. You will be proud to know that the Florida House passed a $75.3 billion new budget. Aren't we excited? It went from $60 billion to $75 billion. And it is prioritizing funding in the best interest of all Floridians. So let's see what those are. They have passed a law that says they have a surplus this year, so they're going to give $500 million back to Floridians. And how are they going to do that? They're going to reduce the disgraceful fees that they put on the Floridians in order to get the surplus in the first place from our licensing fees. But you're going to love this one. They are giving to help the Floridians, they are going to support 4 tax holidays. Back to school tax, hurricane preparedness tax, energy and water efficient appliances tax forgiveness, and a physical fitness membership tax. If I was a representative, I'd be embarrassed to put my name next to that.
Exactly.
Think about that. Back to school tax holiday. That I can understand. That would be, even though I am against all of that, I would support that only because it does help the parents who have been taxed to oblivion. But hurricane preparedness? Excuse me. If you choose to live on a coastal area and you are concerned about hurricanes, I should pay for it. Neil, you should pay for it. So all those people living on all those islands, you should pay for it. Chip in. What's wrong with you?
I lived in the Keys, and I was surrounded by water on my property. I lived on a peninsula out in the Gulf. And when a hurricane was a-coming, I got going.
That's right. And I'm sure that when you went to buy things to prepare for the hurricane, you didn't pay taxes on them, did you?
No, and I always was prepared. I didn't wait for it to come.
That's the whole key. If the government, quote, would teach the kids in school to be prepared, then they wouldn't be last minute rushing to buy and have a tax holiday on their batteries and their other items, which, now roll it back, who does that really support? Does it support the people? No, it supports the vendors who make those products. Well, who supplies what do the vendors do with their surplus when they sell those products? Oh, they donate to the legislators who give it back to the vendors in a tax holiday. Water and energy efficient appliances. Did we forget the Clean Air Act of 2015? Guess what that says in there? It says all appliances after 2015 will have a chip and will integrate with your smart meter. Oh, and now what are we going to do? We're going to subsidize the purchase of those appliances. Are we so stupid that we forgot what Cash for Clunkers did to the small businesses in the area? What happens to those small businesses that repair those other appliances? What happened to the businesses that made appliances that didn't have chips? What happened to those? But my favorite has to be physical fitness memberships. We are subsidizing physical fitness memberships. And they signed those.
We're already doing that with the greenways.
You're right.
I got to get one thing in there, and we talked about this last Thursday when Adrian Wiley was on for this scam rail that's coming through Central Florida here, thanks to good old Micah and, of course, Rick Scott, who caved in. or played whatever kind of game you want to call it, Adrian Wiley was saying, for every person who boards on ScamRail, the Florida taxpayers are paying $4 every time somebody gets on that stupid train. We are going to pay $4. And when I asked him, I said, well, what would you do to shut it down? I mean, what are you going to do at this point? And he is adamant about defunding it. Now,
yeah.
I'm trying to imagine how the rest of, I mean, he can obviously not sign the bill if they put it in there. And he's really adamant about defunding a lot of things, which I think is great. But it's probably not quite that easy. I would hope so. But at least he wants to do it. But I want people to know, $4 per person, $4 taxpayer dollars per person when they just step on that stupid train to nowhere. It's going to be a ghost train. It's just, and this was all promoted by a bunch of so-called conservatives. That's the reason why
you can't listen to the stupid part.
Yeah.
My question is, why would anyone want to go to a light rail? You got to get there to get onto the train. And you got to hope it's on time. You got to hope it's running when you need to use it, which I'm sure the schedule isn't going to be that way. And then when you get to a destination, when you get off, what do? Stand there and hold your meeting on the platform? How do you get there, you know, once you get there, then where do you go? This thing is not going to save people money. It's not going to save them time.
No.
You know, they've got to flag down a taxi, get a ride to get there, and once they get there, they've got to go through the same process all over again. So what's so great about it?
I can't remember who said it. I mean, there were many of us who were telling this stuff to them way back when. But all of a sudden, now, here's the other garbage that goes along with it. It's like, gosh, look what happens. Nobody can get anywhere once they get off the train. And, of course, they had to drive to get there. Had to drive just as far to get to the train as it would have been to go wherever they were going. But now they don't have any way to – what are they going to do when they get off the train? Well, now we got to go fund bus service, too. So now they're talking about all the funding they're going to do for buses. Which if they would have just done the right type of mass transit with the bus service, which they could have easily included the private sector on their own, not public-private partnerships, but the private sector doing it on their own, we could have actually done a lot more for mass transit, fancy carpooling, if you want to call it that, kind of things. But that's what they're saying. But right now they're out there saying, well, now we've got to give money for that. And also, Karen, I apologize. I was supposed to talk about we were going to be having a little bit of a new format on the show. Totally forgot about that, but maybe we can get to that later.
I know there's just so much to talk about because I believe that the people who are doing this have never ridden a New York subway. Let me tell you, folks, there is nothing nicer than being packed like a sardine in the middle of the summer on a New York City subway when the train is late or when it's raining and or when the people standing next to you haven't taken a shower in months or are sick or decide they like to stick their hand in your pocket or on your butt.
This is what
goes on in the subway, folks. This is a mass transit that we can't wait to wrap our arms around. Nothing was more wonderful than getting off the train and standing and waiting for four buses because all of them were packed because the scheduling didn't match. And then you're working with schedules. See, folks, this is not about mass transit. This is about control. If they can control your movement, then they can control you. And that's
and to get
what
at you out of
really
your car.
About. Exactly. So all those auto manufacturers, whoop-dee-doo, when these unconstitutional rules get in place. But as I was reading this budget, the other thing that I found is we're going to have a tax holiday for helmets because when they get off the train, they're going to get on their bikes, right? Isn't that what we're doing?
And who's making the helmets? Where are the helmets coming from?
And where are the helmets coming from?
Are we manufacturing helmets now finally in America, or are they still the helmets that are coming from China?
Oh, well, please, Neil.
don't be logical. If it was logical, they'll never do it. And here's the other thing, folks. What happens when you go shopping? Nothing is nicer than driving to the supermarket, loading up the car, and driving home at my convenience and unpacking my car. Did you ever try to schlep bags on the subway and then on the bus? Oh, my goodness, that is a joy. And then you get to your flat, and you have to walk up 4 flights of stairs. Oh, I just can hardly wait. It's going to be so much fun.
Think of this, Karen. Think about, like, in Florida and other hot states. They want you, oh, bike to the store. Okay, fine. We end up having to bike because they've taken our cars now. Think about your frozen food and your ice cream by the time you get home.
Oh, yes.
You'll have a pack of dogs following you because of the ice cream that's dripping on the bike path behind you.
But wait a minute. This is all part of a diet program because now you won't be able to buy ice cream. This is going to help nutritionally.
Right.
But more importantly, we do have a guest
but
on tonight.
Here's another scary thing that nobody is talking about. You ever
Karen,
walk through a pack of people with your arms filled with packages?
Oh,
walk
yeah.
through a mob? How nice is that? That's a real warm fuzzy. Because we know they're not reporting the flash mobs. So think about
okay,
that one.
Karen, just to let you know, your special guest has arrived.
Okay, folks. Well, we've been talking about Florida. And part of our goal now, and Sally, we'll talk about the new format of the show after the break, which we now are going to be taking. We'll talk about that because we want everybody to know what's going on. But it's important for us to understand a lot of the policies and regulations that we are facing have already been implemented. And I'm getting guests to come on the show of places where these programs have already been implemented so that we can see how wonderful they're working out. So last week we had Dee from Canada, and this week we have Suzanne Posel, who is from Oregon. Welcome, Suzanne. Welcome.
Thank you
to
for
the
having
show.
Me. Thank you. I have since migrated to Washington State, but, you know, Great Northwest.
Okay, the Great Northwest. Suzanne, you are on the line with Sally Baptiste. She is the producer of the show, and Neil Rice, who is my special guest always and does the most incredible research of anyone that I have ever come across. So we all welcome you. And
hi.
Suzanne, we know, has a lot of good information to share with us about some of these wonderful programs that have been put in place in the Oregon-Washington area.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I broke the story a couple of years ago about the shoeboxes that they were building across, starting in New York. In San Francisco, they have 150 square feet. I realize that I'm probably, I talk about this so much I forget. These Agenda 21 houses, affordable housing, by the way, and it's 422 square feet, 222 square feet, 150 square feet. You know, go look at your parking space and try and fit all of your furniture into that little area. That's about 150 feet. They have them in Oregon. They just it's called Liberty Center, by the way. Liberty Center, where you're all squeezed in real tight like rats in a cage.
Oh, gosh. You know, you just mentioned that, and I saw a picture of Korea, and they actually have cages. They reminded me of dog kennels where people go to, that's where they live, and that's about as big as they are. And they you can put up a curtain in between one cage and the next cage, but that's basically the way that people are living. And this is
sure.
where we're
in I think it was China. They have if you're going to stay in town, they have coffins. It's about the size of a coffin. It's shaped like a coffin. It's got a bed. It's got a little panel where you can sort of hang up your clothes. And a lot of couples are using this because they live out in the suburbs or in the rural areas. They work in the city, so it's easier for one of them to just stay the night or a couple of nights in one of these coffins, basically. You know what's funny is in the 1950s and the 1960s, they told us to buy everything we could get our friggin' hands on, right? Anything you could touch, you had to buy it. Now, they're like, hey, you don't need all that stuff. You don't need space. You don't want to eat at your house. You don't, you know, your furniture can come out of the walls. You don't need all that room anymore.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, they were promoting small business. So the concept was to be a consumer and support small business, and therefore small business would flourish and people would make money and blah, blah, blah. Well, now that they're getting rid of all the small businesses and there's literally very little to buy, they're going in the opposite direction, saying, you're exactly right, stop buying, stop buying. What did George Bush say right after 9/11? Oh, we're going to continue to shop. Was that man on drugs? What a stupid thing to say.
He used to have a very, very bad cocaine habit. Just say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if he still do. No, I'm just saying. He used to be a real big cokehead. He used to get arrested for driving under the influence. And yeah.
Well, that goes back to his daddy who used to run cocaine from Panama, from the country of Panama, using our American aircraft with his buddy Noriega.
Okay, so, yeah, he was sending it directly to his friend Bill Clinton in Arkansas through
right.
Through Homestead Air Force Base, right?
Yes. And the funny thing is, when I went down to Panama, I worked in the telecommunications industry, and I was working on a deal to terminate calls going to Cuba because you could not call directly from America to Cuba. And the way that calls would go is you would have to go from America to Panama, and then from Panama they would send the call over to Cuba. And we were going to lay cable from Panama to Cuba so that we could terminate calls in Cuba. Well, I had a big meeting with the ambassador who lived around the corner from me and the vice president, and we were setting up this deal. And at the end of the meeting, the vice president says, would you like to go to the Air Force place and see where George Bush was running drugs? I was like, okay. I thought it was a secret. No, it wasn't a secret. Everybody knew. Everybody knew except the American people. So now we'll be so fortunate we'll have Jebby. We haven't had enough torture. We have to be tortured.
You know, my mother said that. My mother's still in Florida, and she said that. She said as soon as he stops being governor, he's going to go after a presidency. You watch.
Well,
yes.
They just
well,
had
he
a
has
huge,
never stopped.
Yeah, they just had a huge dinner with the former Mayor Bloomberg from New York, and it was a billion-dollar dinner. For Jeb Bush, looking at 2016.
Oh, aren't
well, you know, a Bloomberg just got promoted. He's now an ambassador. He's a U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and he is a personal assistant to Ban Ki-moon.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't we lucky?
I saw his picture today with him on TV, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And that wasn't April Fool's, huh?
Nope.
No, it's true, guys. Look it up. It really is true.
Oh, my God. Well, by the time they finish with the new thing now with the climate, but before we get to that, Suzanne, something that I learned from you a while ago, I would like you to please explain to people what the real results of these endangered species and closing the logging communities in Oregon and Washington, what really happened as a result of that? Because when I tell people, they don't believe me.
I don't know.
Oh, the town's going out of business?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That's what
they
I mean.
Have
in
to
the
get
far-
rid, they have to, like, they have to get rid of us and move us into urban areas somehow. And so they're cutting off highway access to rural areas. They're not doing any infrastructure to the roads. The people are left up to their own device. There's nowhere to work. You have to travel 4 hours. My husband commutes. We live in Port Orchard, Washington, and my husband commutes across the bay to go to work once a week. And he drives about 5.5-6 hours both ways.
It is just unbelievable that it has come this far. And this is where we're going if we don't take a stand.
It gets even better than that, though. IBM, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in February, IBM and AT&T announced that they will go ahead and take over the necessary servers and the software that would be needed to implement all of the smart devices into our new smart cities that we're going to get by, I don't know, next year?
Oh, gosh. IBM, the company that helped assist Hitler find the Jews with their programs and their computer programming. So just keep that
right.
in mind, folks.
Yeah, he had to find an efficient way to count and keep track of all of the concentration camp victims. So what IBM did was create basically what would be now considered archaic, but software to put the – that's why they installed the numbers, because that was their identification, and it matched to all the information that they had on the person before and while they were in the concentration camp. They were even keeping track of how long it was taking people to die, what the conditions were at the time, if they had run any experiments on them. They kept track of that. It's disgusting.
And these are the same people that are now going to be doing exactly the same thing. I don't know if you remember back far enough, but if us seniors remember our original, if anyone has, your original Social Security card, it was issued with a number. And underneath the number, it said, not to be used as identification.
Mm-hmm.
That was because people were outraged. They did not want a Social Security number. And that was what the government, that's what they did. Oh, well, we won't use this to identify you because, of course, we identified with what Hitler did. Well, that's what they're using now. So, and that's not an April Fool's either. But the other thing that really got me with the logging industry was during the time that the logging industry was at full bloom, people don't realize how much care the loggers took in managing the forests. We were presented with this picture that loggers went into the forest and they cut down everything that was living, period. And when they left, the forests were devastated and the forests were never going to grow and we were never going to have trees again. And that was what was being taught to the kids in school. When in effect, what the loggers were doing was they were taking care of the forest. They would separate out an area. They would replant the trees that they cut down. And they were also doing what we now call, what was called was the controlled burns. And when the burning was controlled on the bottom of the base of the tree, and the trees did not grow in the way that they're growing now on top of each other, vying for the little bit of rain or water or whatever it is, the nutrients that they're getting because they're overgrown. And we did not have the amount of devastating fires that we do right now. And we have these devastating fires which will eat up more than what a logger would have ever eaten up in a lifetime. They'll snap up in a very short period of time because right underneath all of that timber, all those trees, is all of this dried brush that goes up in a snap when lightning strikes, and lightning does strike. So that was a
well, sure,
really
they have those. They have that problem in Florida. Florida is like the lightning capital of the world. And
yes.
Out in the Everglades, and you get those brush fires going. Yeah, it's tremendous.
Yep, and that is exactly what's happening. But I have good news for everybody. Our wonderful governor in the state of Florida one of these areas that he closed, that was closed to the loggers because of some owl or bird or something, some bug, who knows. And they closed it because of conservation in Suwannee County. Well, our governor has now opened it to a foreign corporation who's giving jobs to Floridians. Isn't that nice? Giving our land away so that Floridians can have jobs instead of the business that they used to have, which was logging. So this is what globalism really, really means. It means taking away your wealth and telling you, instead of you having a business where you can control your own destiny, we're going to give you a job that somebody else will then be able to control you. So we see a lot of that going on in Florida. But Suzanne, you are a homeschooling mom. Tell us how that started. What made you decide to do that?
Well, ever since, well, I have two children, a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and when my 7-year-old was born, I didn't see the reason not to teach him things. We never talked down to him. We didn't allow people to coo him and baby him. And his ability to articulate is, I think, advanced considering some of the other kids in the neighborhood. And I think I attribute that to not allowing anyone to, you know, kind of baby and coo him. But I was teaching him Spanish and French from, I don't know, a year. And so it was just a natural progression. And then when we moved to Beaverton, Oregon, I went and spoke to the teachers, and I was not thrilled. And that's when I found out about Common Core. And so I said, there's no way I'm sending my kid there. My son is naturally mathematically inclined. He's interested in robotics and gears and engineering. He takes everything apart, and it's good that his father is a mechanic by trade because he can put it all back together. But my son's natural innate abilities would be quashed and destroyed by the time he left elementary school, and I can't allow that. So that is the real main reason why I homeschool my children. It's just to protect them and make sure that they are informed not only with factoids, but understanding and comprehension of where we've been and where we are and the possibilities of where we could go, while fostering his self-esteem and building up his personal paradigm, because he's going to be interpreting the world that is his reality, and it may not be the utopia that I hope it might be. It may be something else, and I want him to be able to stand tall and stand strong and say, no, you're not going to treat me that way, or this is how I expect to be treated. We're talking to him right now. He mentioned to me a couple of days ago that he wanted to sell cars, and I said, why? And he said, well, there's a lot of homeless people, and they could get jobs if they had cars, so I'd like to sell them cars. And I explained to him, well, if you're going to sell cars, you're going to have to own the dealership, because if you don't own the dealership, you're just subject to someone else. And so we've been talking to him about starting his own business and why it's so important to be an entrepreneur and take his ideas. And he keeps a journal, and he draws blueprints of things. He drew this blueprint of a fan. And he was very upset one day because they heavily chemtrail the skies here, and it's really bad. And so he thought that the rain would go away if they would stop putting this garbage in the sky. So he came inside the house and built this big fan and showed me how it was going to work, and it was going to blow away all the chemtrails out of the sky, which I thought was really inventive. He wouldn't even bother to think anywhere close to that if he were in school. The kids in the neighborhood that are his age and older, they all walk around like they're catatonic, and most of them are on some sort of mood stabilizer, so they probably are catatonic. But he's even corrected the grammar of a 13-year-old of a friend of ours who we have dinner with once a week. So, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I wish more children were able to, you know, foster their own their own abilities, you know, before it gets beaten out of them. The world is going to do its best to beat them into submission. They need a healthy start. You know, that you only get 20 years before the rest of their life happens, and it's not a lot of time compared to the 60 or 70 years that they're going to have with everyone and everything telling them that they're wrong, that they're stupid, that they should just keep their head down and do what they're told.
You're absolutely right, and that to me is really the answer to this. Instead of everybody screaming about Common Core and this and that and the other thing and what's going on in school, when you have a child, that is a responsibility, and that is your responsibility. And if you are unhappy with the way that your child is being taught, is being told, whatever it happens to be, then it's your responsibility to make that change. And people have the ability to make the change, just like you did. And I really wish that more and more people would do the homeschooling avenue. I wish, because that nothing will be more impactful to a government run amok than people taking their kids out of government-controlled indoctrination clinics, because that's all they are.
Yeah, our children, they are going to be the next presidents and congressmen and heads of corporations. And look at what they're unable to do.
Yep.
And they will never, at some point, their brain is going to stop sponging. It's going to become difficult for them to learn a new language, to learn a new skill. You know, one of the things that we do with our children is my daughter is 3 years old, and we give her word finds, and we just we need to facilitate the brain's ability to see patterns, doing crossword puzzles, doing things, because when you get older, you can't learn as fast as you might need to in this technological age. And if you keep your mind malleable, you have that ability for as long as you're able to facilitate that. But these children are going to be the people who are running this country in, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And when I see them out in the street playing, I'm really, really concerned.
So you see a remarkable difference then?
From the children that I played with as a kid to the children that play with my kid at the park, it is such a big difference that it's uncomparable. And they don't even play with each other. It's the strangest phenomenon. They're all at the gym, outside at the playground, you know. They're all playing on the monkey bars. They're all sliding and swinging, but they're not playing with each other. They don't play with each other. They just play with the giant toy that's in front of them, and they don't engage, and they don't start games. My son and my husband were out, and there's a soccer field right next to it, and so my son and my husband were kicking the soccer ball around, and these two little girls around my son, they ran out there real quick because they wanted to play soccer too. The mother took it upon herself to make a big scene and grab her two children and apologize for them disrupting my son and my husband's game. And I thought to myself, I was so happy when I saw the two girls running, because I thought, now some kids are going to start playing a soccer game. And as soon as she snatched them up, my heart sank.
Wow.
Why don't we just let our kids be kids and go play and go get in trouble and go figure out how to deal with their own problems and quit micromanaging and let them go and get them, like, shut that screen off, shut that game off, take away that video game. Don't even introduce it into the house.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, but the goal is not to let them be able to think. And then they have to be told what to think and when to think it. And you can't, if you interact with someone else and actually start a conversation and have a conversation, then you might learn how to think, and that's not the purpose of any education anymore. We're teaching the kids what to think. We're not teaching them how to think. So that portion of the brain doesn't get developed anymore. And as they go through life, they are incapable of, as you say, recognizing patterns. And that was an article that I just finished writing which we'll talk about in a little bit. But patterns are what makes the world go around, guys, because everything is repetitious and everything creates a pattern. And it's your ability to decipher that pattern and put that pattern together that will enable you to make the right choices to succeed. And when you are incapable of pattern recognition, you have no self-confidence. And when you have no self-confidence, you retreat and you pick up a machine or a doll rather than interacting with another human being because you're never sure of yourself. And that's what we're doing to our kids in school. And at this moment, we are going to take a hard break, and we're going to mention that you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman. Sally Baptiste, our producer, we're going to talk in a minute about the new formatting of our show. And we have Suzanne Posel from now Washington, not D.C., Washington State, big difference. And I'm not sure if Miss Neil Rice is still with us, but she is still here. And we are brought to you also on Red State Talk Radio on Wednesday at 12 afternoon and Sunday at 12 evening. Please visit our website, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, saveamericafoundation.com, karenshone.com, and votekarenshone.com. And we thank you all for joining us this evening. You're listening to us talk about connectivity and what are the ramifications of some of these wonderful, insane programs that are being pushed upon us, our children, and our country, and how they are really, I can't find one of them that's working. And you know what the sad part is? A lot of these programs could really be good if they weren't so egregiously bad. I don't know how else to say it. But some of the ideas, you know, it's not a bad thing to be healthy. It's a good thing to be healthy. But it's the person that should make the choice to be healthy. And that, I was talking to someone about that yesterday. And I said, the problem with health and why it's not understood is because they don't teach biology in school anymore. If people understood what unhealthy food did to their body, what the fat cells looked like, what they could become, how many people would go out and do this knowing full well that this would be the result? But because they're not taught biology anymore, because they have no idea the way the body works, people can't even name the parts of their body anymore inside. They don't even know the function of the body parts that are in their body. They don't know how food is broken down. So therefore, they place no relevance on what they put in their mouth because it doesn't make any difference to them because they have no knowledge. And I believe that's the same thing with abortion. We can mandate all the mandates in the world that we want to, but if people don't understand that a fetus is a baby, which is a human being, and we don't want to kill human beings, then there would be a lot less abortions. But instead, they're being taught in school how to have sex and how to be lesbians, and that was a program I heard yesterday. It almost blew my head off. There's a college in Georgia that the professor is teaching on a weekend class that we are paying for, how to be a lesbian in 5 easy lessons. Oh, my God. What kind of idiocy is that? Can you imagine paying for your child to go to school to take a class of how to be a lesbian?
When it came imagine. Time, when I went to middle school and it came time for me to take sex ed, my mother did not sign off on the paper, and so I didn't take it. My mother told the school, it's my responsibility, and I will teach her what she should know about her body about other people's bodies and what the potentials are. And I'm very fortunate that my mother worked in hospitals. She was in the medical records department, and so she knew a lot of the doctors. So I got a really good education, actually, from my mother. But I am so glad that I did, because I never did anything that I couldn't undo.
Right.
That was the big thing growing up. She said, you know, I understand you're going to try things. I understand you're going to do things. But don't do anything you can't undo, like coming home in a squad car or coming home pregnant or, you know, I was a child of the 80s and 90s, so crack cocaine was really big. Don't do any hard drugs. I didn't do any of them. And I still to this day, and I instill it in my children, you know, what they're learning about anatomy and physiology is not the dumbed down version, but the applicable, understandable for their age range version, because they know, you know, they have a body, they know, they're not stupid. But if we leave them to their own devices, they're going to do things without understanding the repercussions, because at their age, they're not thinking about mortality. They have no concept that they could be gone tomorrow. So they're just going to go along with the ride and the thrill. It's our job as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles to lead that child to be the best version that they could possibly be of themselves. Without that, we're coming into 11-year-olds having sex in school.
You're right. And as a teacher, I saw that. And as a child, I remember my mother and some of our best conversations, and some of our closeness came when we talked about sex, when we talked about love, when we talked about marriage, when we talked about biology. We had those conversations. And the kids today, you're absolutely right. All they get to do is press the I want a thrill button. And they don't get anything else other than I want a thrill button, I want it now button. Give it to me now. And they don't think of what are the ramifications of that after. And yes, when we were growing up, and Neil, I'm sure you remember, and Sally, I'm sure you remember also, I had friends that got pregnant. Yes, I had friends that had abortions. Yes, I had friends that did stupid things. But the regret was a lot different, and the lesson learned was a lot different than the lesson learned today. Because now we have kids having kids, and we have kids having multiple abortions because they don't think. They're not taught to think. Again, they're not taught what to think. They're taught what to think, not how to think. And they don't believe that their actions have any consequences. And that's a big problem when your actions have no consequences.
Let me jump in here for just a minute, too. Growing up, and of course this is going back a few years, but when I grew up, our family was close. Most of the Sundays, I mean, my grandparents and my aunts and uncles would come over for dinner. And after dinner, always on the occasions when they would show up, we were always given a lot of games as small children for Christmas presents. And we would pull out checkers. We would pull out the Chinese checkers. We would pull out Yahtzee's game, this type of thing. And we would all do it together, you know, over a snacks and a soda or a cold drink, which you're not supposed to have either. And we had the best time doing this. But in playing games like this, and, you know, not just with other kids, but with adults too, it makes your mind work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're
yeah,
not seeing where kids are getting these games at an early age at Christmas for Christmas presents, and then having the parents or the grandparents or other members of the family participating, spending some time.
Yeah, we do that. I bought Uno. I bought Connect Four, Go Fish for the kids. For Christmas, my mother-in-law got them Chutes and Ladders, which I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And the television that my children do watch, we don't have cable television. We watch everything through the Internet. I go back to the cartoons that I used to watch as a kid, because the cartoons and the kid shows that are coming out now are unacceptable, absolutely 100% inappropriate. I'm not even going to expose them. They don't even know it exists. They still think it's like 1985.
No, this is true.
But that is real. That's good, because they will be able to then decipher, and they'll be able to figure right from wrong. And the kids today have no clue. And I look at them, and it's so incredibly sad. It is so
The older cartoons, the ones that I grew up, even G.I. Joe still had a moral at the end of the story. So they get that, you know, through the reruns of watching this. And my son will ask me a question about something. And the other day he asked me, what is a hot dog? I said, you really want to know? He says, yeah. So we put on How It's Made, and he watched for 15 minutes them make hot dogs. And he looked at me and said, I'm not eating that ever again. No way. That's really awesome.
If I could interrupt for just a quick second here. I see some callers coming back and forth into the queue, and if you want to speak on the air, remember you got to press 1, otherwise I don't go to you. So if there's anything you want to share on the air, make sure you press 1. I see them kind of bouncing around out there. And then one other thing, just talking about the things that to me are the most meaningful when you're with a child, to get their imagination going and to get them engaged besides staring at a computer or an iPad or whatever else, something robotic in that sense, blowing bubbles. I tell you, there's nothing, I've seen so many kids, you think the imagination when they see the bubble getting big and all these other kinds of things, it, these very basic things that are so fundamental to a child's development, even though it sounds kind of crazy. Now, yeah, you know, the parent needs to be there and don't let them drink the bubbles. That doesn't work. You're supposed to blow the bubbles. But it's such a more simple world that truly engage the child's imagination and their physical, you know, it was actually good for your health. You had to blow the bubbles. That was good for your lungs. As long as you didn't.
Yeah.
What a better feeling than seeing a child or a child when they're laughing, even as an adult. When you laugh, doesn't it make you feel good all over about yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We need more positive, healthy ways in which we can release dopamine into our brain. We need to do that. Another thing that helps that is giving. It has this weird effect. It makes us really, really happy and want to do it again. And it also has the effect on the person who is in the state of gratitude, which means they either want to give you something or pay it forward. And so eventually everybody's benefiting from this circle of happiness and giving and gratitude.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't thought of that. That is really true. I was fixated on the bubbles because those bubbles are filled with CO2. Oh, my God, we better not tell anybody.
I don't know. There's another
because
joke.
Because you're destroying
was
the planet.
Glenn Beck was talking about, and I won't go into details because we're having a little bit of fun with the bubbles, but it was, I'll just mention it was talking about cows, so I don't know if you guys heard the other story.
Oh, yes. This is the newest thing with, you know, it's very interesting, and this is talking about patterns, and that's why I said I wanted to talk about that after. When you watch the patterns of communists, they always do the same thing. And first they present the issue, and then they recreate the language, and then they recreate the statistics, and then they rewrite history. And when there's pushback, and the people that they're trying to indoctrinate into communism say, no, well, then they do the hurry up and we have got to be immediately done, because if it's not immediate, it's not going to happen and the world is going to fall apart. And now you have the crisis building. And you can see that pattern happening with the global warming garbage. And now we have the UN who has kicked their report to the curb, which says that human beings have absolutely nothing to do with climate. All the scientists, the real scientists who aren't paid by stupid grants, know that that's true. Kids that actually had science in school know that that's true. Scientists know that that's true. And yet, because people are beginning to say, wait a minute, this is not true. The Earth is not warming. This hasn't happened. It's a cycle. It's a pattern. When you lose pattern recognition, then you lose the self. You lose what is happening because you can't recognize the pattern for what it is. And that's exactly what's going on with our climate now. So now the latest thing, as they try to tax us into oblivion and control all of our food, is that they have fixated now on methane gas, which is, I think there's a little bit more parts of methane gas in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. And, of course, the cows produce methane gas, as we all do, when we expel air, when we fart, cow farts. So they're going to tax the farmers with the amount of cows that they have because they have decided that it is the cows that are destroying the climate. So it's the people, and now we have the cows. But my thought was...
What about all the other animals out there? What about all the
other
animals?
I was just
going
to say that, Sally. What happens to all of these animals now? We have more polar bears than we ever had before. I just read an article about how the endangered Florida panther species is becoming so great that they don't have enough room for them in the forest, too many of them. So, well, don't they pay tax? Well, why aren't they paying tax? Is it just the human beings?
Sounds like bounty time to me.
Yeah. I mean, this is not right. After all, we're equal. I think they should pay tax, too. Or maybe, you know, maybe they should stop eating and breathing. Oh, my God. Would we have to euthanize and reduce
their population? They tax us
for
saving the animals. It's just so crazy. It's like, people, come on, have just a little bit of common sense. I mean, look at all the taxes we pay to save the animals. Now we're being paid because the animals live and do what they would do, just like any living creature does do. And but they're going to go after these because this way they can tax us through the price of the food and this other stuff. And I mean, this is how pathetic this government, and unfortunately how pathetic the society has gotten, because we allow it to happen.
Yes. But with people like Suzanne and wonderful things that you are doing with your children, there's hope. And that's really what this is all about, and that's why we produce shows like this. And that's why, now, Sally, let's tell our audience what we're going to do from now on, the new format of American Statesman.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple of things going on. Just so people know, American Statesman, we are at the regular timelines. We have a show on Monday, Tuesday, American Freedom Watch Radio, and then on Thursday we focus on the elections coming up. We are trying to get as many candidates out there as we can and talk about things that are coming up on the ballot. We want you to own your vote. We want you to know why it's crazy to be loyal to a party instead of loyal to your country. There is a difference, these kind of things. So Thursday is a Smart Talk, election 2014, know the candidates and know the issues, too, because we got a lot of them being stuck on the ballots here in Florida this year. And then on Monday, pretty much talk about whatever anyone wants to. Have a special guest come on, do a lot of ranting. That's my I call it my therapy session because I do a lot of ranting on Monday and those type of things. But the whole point is, you know, people have to understand, American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, it is not funded or sponsored by anyone. People have told me different ways I could be an affiliate and get some money here and there. I don't want people to think this show has anything to do about money. This show has everything to do with saving this country. Why it came up with the name of American Statesman? What's the difference between a politician and a statesman? A statesman works A politician works for the next election. A statesman works for the next generation. This was written by James Freeman Clark back in 1819 or sometime back in there. So this is nothing new. Politicians, the mentality, the greed, whatever you want to call it, that's so instinctive to human nature, isn't anything new. And that's why we need to. That's why there was never the intent to have career politicians. There should never be career politicians. Thomas Jefferson was so adamant about term limits. But you'll have people out there today say, well, wait a minute, you've got term limits, just don't you vote them out. The system gets too corrupted. And again, the whole reason for American statesmen is, let's talk about the true statesmen that are out there, stateswomen, those who truly represent us. Get rid of, exterminate the politicians, which, sad to say, is probably at least 95%, probably closer to 99%. But American statesmen is all focused on open discussion. It's not about money. It's about saving this country. So I encourage people who want to call in, talk about an issue they believe in or adamant about, please do. We're hopefully going to have a guest come on about the Operation American Spring. People need to know what is our role in this process, and that's what this is about. American Statesman, Blog Talk Radio, it's not about money. It's about saving this country, and I want people to come here to talk about the issues and share their honest opinions. And I'll mention one other thing real quick here. Just a couple weeks ago, but I guess it was 2 weeks ago, Monday, we had Tom Pastore come on and talk about Cinco de Mayo. Why are we celebrating Cinco de Mayo? Most people have no clue, and they don't celebrate it in Mexico, but yet we trash the Alamo. You know, don't remember the Alamo thing? Nobody wants to have a proclamation for the Alamo, but Rubio wants to have a proclamation for Cinco de Mayo. It's sick, and then the Battle of Goliad. So we had a whole segment on that because so many people don't even know the history. So we try to talk about these kind of things that people totally forget. What would have happened? What happened in the Southwest as a result of all these various things, the Mexican-American War, the Southwest wouldn't even have been there. You know, it's just these kind of things, too, that people don't really get a chance to don't learn in public education. Need I say more on that one? So, anyway, that's kind of what we're focused on here.
And, Suzanne, you also do a radio show, don't you?
Well, I did have a radio show. I had to put it on hold for some other projects that we're putting together, but I did have a radio show on American Freedom Radio, who has unfortunately gone off air.
Ah, that's unfortunate. And well, how can people find you when they have questions?
My website is OccupyCorporatism.com. I've also started my own news agency, and so we have an online newspaper, the USIndependent.com. My email address is OccupyCorporatism@gmail.com, and I really do try to get to everyone's email. If not, you can find me on Facebook or Twitter, and I do try to connect with people on social media as well. So I try to make myself as accessible as possible.
Well, I love the name. Explain to everyone why they need to understand what corporatism is.
Corporatism is the means by which everything is crashing and going away from the constitutional republic that we were intended to be toward a fascist, communist, whatever newism they want to call it, country. And through corporatism, they have changed our minds, they have changed our culture, they have changed the way we interact with each other, and they will continue to do so, pushing us toward isolation, pushing us toward the assembly line, and pushing us toward these tiny little shoeboxes to live in until we decide we don't want to comply with their system anymore.
And that then leads us to the Operation of American Spring, which is one of the ways to close attention to this. Folks, all of the things that we're putting in, all of these mechanisms that are in place, these are all tools that our founding fathers have given us. We have the right to redress our government. We have the right to speak out and saying no. We have the right to tell these unconstitutional agencies, get off my land, it's mine, You don't belong there. Where is your warrant? What gives you the right to come on my private property? Put a meter on my private well. By the way, are they doing that out in Washington? I've been discovering here in Florida, as I'm talking to farmers, that all of a sudden meters are going on private wells as they feel that they can control and own the water. And by they, we do not mean our local, our individual farmers. They is water management, a self-anointed group that should not even exist, is going around to the farmers in our area and telling them to put meters on their private wells. How dare they? Is that happening out in Washington as well?
Not to my knowledge in Washington, but that's actually happening across the country. That's happening in Oregon. They're also telling them that the city is telling the people who have a watershed or collecting rainwater that the water that falls down from the sky, the clouds when they are sitting above the city, belong to the city. And so all of the rain that falls down from those clouds belongs to the city. And they cannot possibly legally, without paying or getting permission, to collect that and then use it, even though they're not even commercializing it. They're just washing their dishes or bathing with it.
Oh, my God, that is sick. Folks, that is really sick. That I mean, how many years and years and years did people collect rainwater? This is something that's done all the time, second nature. We had how many huge cisterns on top of buildings where the water would be utilized for you, for your private use. This is beyond sickness. As to these programs that are being put in place. And it is beyond my, nothing is beyond my comprehension anymore. I just see, as you're right, this is getting tighter and tighter and tighter and more control and control and control. And this is where we are today, folks. And if we don't pay attention to our local government and our state government and get rid of these people. And I'm beginning to believe that treason is what the right word for them, because that's exactly what they are committing. They're committing treason. This is taking, stealing from one to give to another is not an American ideology. That's not what our founding fathers had in mind. Their goal was that individuals who were exceptional would work together and create exceptional things, and we did that successfully for about 200 years until the greedy bastards said, oh, no, we're going to take control. And how did they do it? By money, using corporations. And that is what you are exposing by what you're doing, and I commend you for doing that, because that's a tough nut for people to understand, because that's how they take over. You take a small community and give them money, and you become their lapdog.
Well, you know, and there's another thing, too, that I don't think we've emphasized enough out there, is who is making these laws. These are not even the elected politicians, sleazebag politicians making these laws. These are quasi-governmental agencies all over the place. Here in Orlando, you know my favorite, called the Culture of Corruption, the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, but EPA. These are people who are appointed. These people have no rights to be making laws. That's what we elected these other people to do. And it's just so despicable, but most people don't truly appreciate the fact that, wait a minute, why is EPA making regulations and laws for us to follow? That's not their job. Why is our president making laws, dictator, for us? That's not his job either. People have just, thanks to good old public education, and the and I'll say too much TV, the Occupy the Idiots via the idiot box, people don't have a clue of what this is even supposed to be about. They don't know what citizenship means, what individualism means, and sovereignty. Remember that? What's the thing about... a sovereign citizen, you're not supposed to say that because that's going to get you attacked. You know, they're going to come after you for suggesting that you're a sovereign citizen. What about the sovereign state? It's unbelievable. It's what's happening to our country, and we better wake up. And I hope Operation American Spring really wakes up a lot of people.
Suzanne, on your initiative, how did you get started in focusing on the corporations?
Well, I realized everything is incorporated all the way down to us. That's what Social Security numbers are for. Your chattel.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The worth of this country is based on the GDP, and that includes how much you are expected to earn throughout your lifetime. And this is true, folks. Look, you can look this up. It is based on statistical data of where you were born in the country, the time in which you were born, I mean the era. Whether your parents had college educations, what their background was, what your grandparents' background is, and they take all of this data and assume that throughout your lifetime you would earn X amount of dollars. Now, that is tacked on to you in lieu of you doing that. And so they take that number and they bet it on the stock market and on the international markets, and that is the net worth of the country, or the gross worth of the country. And that is not fair. That is not right. That is human slavery. We are all slaves to our governments. That is unacceptable. On the larger scale, what the corporations do to get us to buy their crap, it really offends me. And I've been speaking out a great deal about how there's marketing. There's even marketing in ideas. I actually heard someone in independent media, I won't mention his name, but he told his audience that he's selling freedom, that he's selling liberty. Folks, you can't be sold something that you are. We need to recognize that. We are sovereign. We are free. We have liberty. Now if we start acting like it, it becomes a whole new game. But
right.
We don't need to buy it. There's no way you can buy your freedom. That doesn't even make sense. That's like, did five get married? The number five that doesn't make any sense.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is a huge deficit in our school system. It is a huge deficit that has created a deficit upon a deficit in our families, because a lot of the things that, you know, that you're talking about, the morality, the self-esteem, the self-confidence, that always came from the school. That came from the family, I'm sorry. That always came from the family first. And the first time I ever heard a parent tell a child, well, you're stupid and you're always going to be stupid, that was the breakdown of the family. Because the family was supposed to take your mistakes, and mom and dad were supposed to take those mistakes, nurture them, and create new ideas with you so that you learned from the past and you learned from your mistakes and you enabled yourself to go forward and become an exceptional human being by learning from our mistakes. When we took away the fact that a child can't make a mistake, he'll feel bad. They all have to get the same trophy for showing up. There's no special. There's no person that is going to become special. There's no doer. There's no one that's going to excel. Why would you excel? It's human nature to be competitive. And when you squash that competition, well, you're squashing the ability of the person to be able to do the best, to be able to create the best, to be able to have the best. And that's what we're doing now. We are taking our best society, best minds, and because they are no longer using wars to kill us, that's what the purpose of wars were. Think about all those incredible minds that were killed in stupid wars for no reason at all, just because the population was getting too big and the rulers needed to have less of a population, so they created a war. But think about all those incredible minds of all of the incredible people that were killed. And what has happened is you have this layer of rich people who, how did they get rich? Well, they didn't get rich by creating anything. They got rich by stealing from us. And that's why I say, when people say we have a $17 trillion debt, I say, no, we don't. We didn't create that debt. Federal Reserve created that debt. Federal Reserve should pay it back. We didn't create the $17 trillion debt. But that's another issue. But anyhow, you're absolutely right. It is the corporations and their greed and their hunger. And let me tell you, folks, having been there, done that, worked on Wall Street, you would be astounded at the way they think of their customers, their workers, and the people as a whole. They have absolutely no regard for you. The only thing they have regard for is what you can produce for them. And that is a horror story upon horror stories when I worked on Wall Street. It was disgusting. If people understood what the stockbrokers did, what they thought of, and how they acted, and how they behaved, the stock market and a stockbroker would be the last person you would give a dollar to. You know what was a good,
I was going to say, let me ask you a quick question on that. On other shows in the past, I've talked about this, and it's my own personal belief, but some people think I'm crazy. I've often said I think the stock market is one of the worst things we have. I think it's one of the most corrupt. I think it's such a harm to us. And people act like, well, God, you got to have stocks. Well, no, you don't have to have a stock. It's public trading. Public trading is gambling and manipulating anything and everything they want to do. It is gambling. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in gambling, why do you believe in the stock market? But I truly believe that public trading like this, it totally screws up the true free market.
Oh, I agree with you. How did Bill Gates get to have Microsoft be a billion-dollar company? How did he get to where he was? He certainly didn't get there by being honest, Bill, and doing the right thing. That didn't work that way. The way that he got there was by manipulating and by putting others out of business so that he could steal their companies, just like what they're doing now with the housing. How did they... I was listening to a commercial before, and they were talking about how in bankruptcy you could buy a house for 10 cents on the dollar. It was somebody's house that they spent a fortune on, fixing up, making look beautiful. It was their home. And now the bank would not negotiate with that individual to help that individual keep their home. No. What did they do? They pushed that person out of their home, stole that person's money, forced that person to have no job because it was outsourced, because they could get cheaper money, cheaper labor someplace else. So here we had this false sense of security of everybody, Bill Clinton, everybody should own a home, everybody should have a home, the American dream. So what did we do? We all went and we bought homes. Wasn't that a wonderful thing to do? And then what did he do? On the heels of that, he turned around and signed NAFTA and said, let me take away your job. Well, I hate to tell you, Billy, but people that don't have jobs can't pay mortgages. But then that was the purpose. What was the purpose?
Right.
You go into that home. You spend your money that you saved for your house that you wanted to live in forever, because that's how neighborhoods were built. What did they do? They pulled the rug out. They outsourced your job. And then we had Georgie Bush, who said, oh, tarp, 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 we've got to take care of those toxic assets that we just created. And what did he do? Well, we've got to make the bank solvent. Why do we have to make the bank solvent? They created the mess. They didn't deserve to be in business. Well, banking might fall apart. Good. Then it would have fallen apart. What would have happened? Oh, a great American tragedy. The banks would have fallen apart. No, the community banks the local banks, the banks that didn't make these crazy loans, they would have been solvent, and the people would have survived very well. But no, it was manipulated, and the market, the bankers who created this mess, then went in and stole what was left by getting the TARP money. Where did that TARP money go? It went like this. Mr. Banker, you have a house in foreclosure. We're going to give you the money to make up that foreclosure. Did that banker turn around and talk to Mr. Consumer and say, well, you know, we got the money from TARP, and we're going to renegotiate and knock down the principal of your house so that you could afford it? Did they do that? No. They said, Mr. Consumer, get out of your house. We don't care how long you spent there, how much money you spent on it. Get out of your house, because we're going to turn around and sell your house for 10 cents on the dollar to some corporation or some foreign investor, and you will have a job. And that was the history of the middle class, and that's why they're successfully eliminating it.
Don't forget about good old Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac out there, too. The whole corruption, everything to do with the housing market, was nothing but a scam against the American people. And, you know, for all the money they used to bail out these different banks, if they would have taken that money and divided it evenly to every household in the United States, think of the difference it would have made.
Oh, of course. They could have paid off everybody's mortgage.
If they cared about the people versus the next election.
Every mortgage in America could have been paid off by what TARP produced. But that was not, then we have to go back to the reality of that was never the goal.
Exactly.
The goal was to eliminate the middle class, and they are doing a very successful job of that. And I think that's where we have to focus. So what solutions are you finding, Suzanne, as you're talking to people? What are people doing?
Well, what people are doing is just praying that something happens. A friend of mine who also writes for the U.S. Independent, Scott Staffney, is an attorney in the state of Washington, and he's dedicated a lot of his practice for a number of years now trying to keep people in their homes and winning every case, 41 cases he's won so far, and exposing the corruption that the banks are doing with court documents. And he's been gracious enough to give me a couple of those documents, and I've written two articles, because it's very important for me to let the audience know, if you see this red flag happening, they might be doing this. In one of the cases that he just won, Bank of America decided that they were going to have the MERS system be the beneficiary of the mortgage. Well, the MERS system is a database. It's not sentient, so it can't be the beneficiary of a mortgage. And when they realized that they sludged this up, they decided that Northwest Trustees would be the beneficiary of the mortgage. But that was actually really dumb, because Northwest Trustees is a subsidiary of Bank of America. So again, you know, they just don't know how to pick these people. They chose a robo-signer who, when I did research on this woman in 2010, when she robo-signed this gentleman's mortgage foreclosure, she had also robo-signed five others in five different states. And the funny thing about Washington State is they have their own constitution, and in that constitution it states that if you're going to sign off on this, you have to be physically holding the deed in your hand, which obviously she wasn't. So Bank of America did all of these really, really ridiculous things, but these are details that happen in the courtroom, and very few people get to or would read public record and find out what happens in these foreclosures cases where the homeowner wins. So I was very lucky that he gave me these documents, and when I read how ridiculous it is, and most homeowners either acquiesce or they try to fight it and get overwhelmed, there's very little to go on, because a lot of these foreclosures end up with the judges in the pocket of the bank to begin with, and everybody mm-hmm. involved is kind of, they kind of know each other anyway, so you're in trouble from the get-go. But we need to keep, like, putting these in through the system, because if you have tenacity and you stick through it with perseverance, and you're right, you can prevail. I mean, at least 41 people tonight are sleeping in their homes, and they always will, because the bank is not coming back to foreclose on their home.
Can you explain to people, excuse me, the robo-signer thing, and there's a reason why I'm asking this, but this is something that's come up recently and some other stuff, and I can explain later, but can you explain to people what robo-signer really means?
Yes. Okay, so this woman's name is Kathy Smith, and Kathy Smith lives and works in Atlanta, Georgia, so to speak. I'm just giving you an example. So Kathy Smith lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and Citigroup from Pennsylvania calls her up and says, hey, we need some mortgages signed. We have about 50 of them. She says, okay, email them, fax them over to me, whatever you want. And then as soon as it gets into her hands, she signs her name, and sends it back. And then other people call her from all over the country, and they say, hey, she gets paid about between $13 and $15 an hour to sit down in the comfort of her own home or wherever she is and sign documents all day, sign mm-hmm. that she is the holder of the note, and they are for hire. Now, Kathy Smith is actually the name of someone who signed off on one of Scott Stafney's clients' mortgage, but she is just one of many, and that's what they do. It's sort of like the paralegal groups, right, who kind of came off and said, well, we can make money without the attorneys, and we can help people without the exorbitant attorney's fees, and that's a wonderful thing. But these robo-signers, they're all kind of under the radar, but kind of bunched up together, and if you're in the know, you can just call them up and hire them.
Right.
Well, and
not only
is that,
a lot of them, Sally, a lot of them were signing off and then saying, Kathy Smith, GP. They were signing names of, like they were a vice president or like they were the loan officer. We found in one of our mortgages, I was a mortgage broker, and in one of our mortgages, all of a sudden, a person that nobody ever knew, nobody ever saw, and nobody ever had contact with was the originator of the loan, who was attesting to the fact that all of the documents were signed in his presence and were true. Well, he was never there.
And this ties into the issue that I have had with a Florida notary, because they're not required to keep a journal or any record. You've got these robo-notaries, and because they were notary, they even give more credibility or whatever legitimacy to these fraudulent documents. And in the case of Florida, it's been a big problem with identity theft and property theft and foreclosures and stuff. And we're trying to get some laws changed, but believe it or not, the state of Florida doesn't think you should have a background check for a person who is going to be a notary, a public officer. And they also don't seem to think it's a problem that you have felons behind bars being notaries. And we want to know why things are messed up. So you can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. You can't make this stuff up. But that's what happens when people are removed, so far removed from the lender or the government. Or when we had to deal with a local bank, you went into the local bank. The local bank knew you. They knew who you were, what you were about. If you had an issue, if you had a problem, they knew what latitude they could take. And when they signed the document, they were the real people. But now I remember way back when I would send in a mortgage package, every single piece of information had to be verified, and we had to sit there and go through it and go through all the documents and make sure they were real. I would have to do that before I signed my name to anything. I wasn't going to lose my license on having something fictitious, somebody saying I signed a document when the person wasn't there. I wouldn't do that. And that's because the mortgages would go to the local bank, and the local bankers, you get to look somebody in the eye. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. And that doesn't happen whether it's in your local bank or in your local government. If you're not looking the people in the eye,
and you don't have that relationship with them, then we have crime and corruption, which is what we have, which is why our founding fathers believed that everything really starts on the local level, and it was so important for people to get engaged on a local level. Because if you keep things on a local level, then the crime, the corruption, the loss is a lot less and a lot diminished. If you know you're buying food from ABC Farmer and you have a problem, you don't need a lawyer to tell you a tomato is no good. You bring it back to the farm and he changes it and gives you another one. And if it happens again, you don't go to that farm, you go to the next farm. But what happens with all of the lawyers and all of this happening in our government, in our every walk of our life, we're removed from the people that provide us the services from where it really counts. And that's the problem, and that's why the corruption is so easy to get into place. Because there's no eye contact. We go back to the kids. There's no conversation. You're not having a conversation with anyone anymore. And my favorite is when you get to call one of these companies and they say, you know, you get to talk to a computer. I don't want to talk to a computer. I'm not interested in talking to a computer. I don't care what the computer says. I always press 00 and make them bring on a person. We have to go back to talking to each other. And once we start doing that, once we start communicating again, then we will begin to see what we are losing and maybe make those corrections there. I mean, Sally, what some of the stuff that you're telling me is going on in the state of Florida just it's Looney Tunes. How can you take documents that are legal documents that equate to hundreds of millions of dollars and not care whether the notary is a felon or has a background check or is legitimate? That is insanity right there on the lowest level.
It was extremely interesting as I was listening to a Senate hearing last week. It just happened to be the Senate Committee of Regulated Industries. I find that very interesting by itself. So far, overall, the ones that have made some changes out there where they're at least going to mandate a journal, it's been, supporting it. But in this particular case, with the regulated industries, three of the senators voted no, and six voted yes to go forward with it. But they had three people who spoke, and out of these three people, one of them was a member from the National Notary Association who was trying to help to correct all the fraud that was going on. The two other people were from the construction industry, and they said it was too burdensome for a notary to keep a journal. That was way too much work to expect them to do. And one of the senators that reported it, the senators that were opposing it all said it was too burdensome. And then one actually had the nerve to say, this is overregulation. To keep a record of signing a legal document like that was overregulation. You're telling me overregulation when I'm getting harassed if there's not a tag on my car in my own front yard, or that there's grass going over the sidewalk, or these other crazy things you're doing, but you don't care about a notary who is signing legal documents that a court in the state of Florida is going to recognize. Plus, this notary is a commissioned sworn state officer. And, I mean, I listen to that, and it's like, tell me this isn't true. I sent some information, and, I mean, I love it. I've done it in the past. I won't do it tonight because we don't have enough time and not really in with the stream of everything we're talking about here. But I love for people to listen to or read, or for me to read to them, the sworn statement of this notary that was involved here in Florida. I mean, this was, you want to talk about, anybody should be scared if this is what they let be a notary public in the state of Florida. This is what you got out there. Scary stuff.
Unbelievable. Yes. Well, no, it's not unbelievable. Nothing is unbelievable anymore. This world is so totally upside down, there isn't anything that is believable anymore. When we have a society that allows experiments to be done on children and children to be taken out of their homes and children to be intentionally made stupid so that people can turn them into slaves. We don't have a free society anymore. And good news is we are beginning, and I see it more and more, because I remember when we first started doing what we're doing, we had so many people telling us we were crazy, we were nuts, we didn't know what we were talking about. I had people get up. I had one woman get up and in the middle of one of the seminars that I was doing, and she said, "You are a liar. This isn't happening in Florida." And she got up and walked out. And we were talking about the implementation of Common Core Race to the Top. This is never going to happen in Florida. They're never going to do this. Well, the good news is we don't have that anymore. So that is really good. There are people, more people. Do you find that, Suzanne, more people are paying attention?
Yeah. Well, yeah. They are, but sometimes it's not for the reason. I don't know. It seems to be trendy, which might be a good thing, that organic food is trendy, that healthy living is trendy, and that homeschooling is becoming trendy. Not vaccinating your kids in Oregon, they really flipped out. Most recently, they have passed legislation that the parents have to sign off on documents like they do in California, where you sit down with the pediatrician and you sign a document that says, "I understand that by not vaccinating my child, I'm endangering the life of my child and everyone on this planet, and if you deem fit, you can take the child from me." It doesn't say that specifically, but that's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes right hand in hand with the waiver. So, yes, you get the waiver, but you also have to sign this document that's filed away with God knows who. You know, if your school is under Common Core, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump before InBloom, which is Bill Gates' answer to data mining all of our children,
right,
and beta testing it in New York City right now.
Right.
That means that little document that you signed off that is in record held at the school and the pediatrician's office will then be data mined and processed through, and they will know who are the dissenters and who are the automatons.
Yep.
Can I ask you a quick question, Suzanne? All your reporting and everything like that, how much have you heard, or what are you seeing out there in reference to Operation American Spring? Are you seeing anything happening out in the Northwest? I mean, I see bits and pieces happening from Texas and across the Southeast, people I know that are going up there. What have you heard, and what's happening that, as far as you know, with Operation American Spring?
Well, I haven't heard very much, and I'm actually kind of glad of that. I have a different approach to this movement. I've done a lot of research into a corporation called the International Republican Institute. One of the guys on the board of directors happens to be Senator John McCain. And Senator John McCain has been seen in pictures with the Free Syrian Army, the heads of the Free Syrian Army, the heads of the people who are now in charge of Egypt, and also the Ukrainian opposition. The I Am Ukrainian was actually funded by a company that has an executive producer who is a member of the CFR and also the International Republican Institute. And why I'm explaining this is because there has been this huge phenomenon in the way in which we occupy other countries, and I'm talking about the United States, in order for regime change to be taken place. And the new way is the fake revolution. I've written a lot of articles about this. The thing that bothers me and really disturbs me about Operation American Spring is it has all the telltale signs of a manufactured revolution. And we all see what happened in Egypt, what's happening in the Ukraine, what happened in Libya, has happened all over the Middle East when they put a fake revolution into a country and break the country down, put in their patsy, and everybody is worse for wear. I don't want to see that here in the United States. And if you go to IRI.org, you will see what I'm talking about, and they have a section on Ukraine because they have been mapping out how they want to put in a new democracy and a new leadership in the Ukraine. Now, the Ukraine is the breadbasket of area.
I am so sorry, but we have to stop. We are coming to the close of our show. Suzanne, you'll have to come back. Will you come back?
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, good. Okay, we only have a quick minute to say goodbye to everyone and to say goodnight and to thank you all for listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman. Please visit our show on Red State Talk Radio at Wednesday, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and Sunday, 12 o'clock in the evening. Thank you, ladies, for joining me this evening. Thank you, Sally Baptiste. Thank you, Suzanne Pozell. Please go and look at the podcast, which you will find on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman. Good night to everyone. Thank you all for joining us this evening. Good night, and have a wonderful week. See you again next week.
Good night. God bless America.
God bless America, yes. And thank you all.